It's time to meet up and catch up at the Weekend Water Cooler. Now, here's your host, Gene Bolduc.
Welcome to the Weekend Water Cooler. So happy to have all of you with us. Joining us today is my good friend. I don't want to think about how long we've been friends, actually, because I'm pretty sure it's since the 1600s. My good friend Sharon.
Speak for yourself.
Sharon Hirsch. Yes, we've been friends since long before you were born. That's what it is. Gosh, you know, Sharon Hirsch with Prevent Child Abuse North Carolina, welcome to the program again.
Thank you so much.
We're always happy to have you with us. Come back whenever you have anything you want to say about virtually anything. Love your organization. Love the work that you do. We're chatting here in advance. I don't think it's a secret to anybody that our program is not live. And so as we're chatting here, it's Friday afternoon, and, you know, people can get a little cross-eyed on Fridays. You know, I'm just saying. I'm perhaps only speaking for myself.
No, you're not. It's Friday. It's been a long week.
A lot of weeks, it feels like Friday, starting at about Monday afternoon. But this week, we're gonna talk about some of the many, many things that Prevent Child Abuse North Carolina is engaged in. Before we jump off on that, I just do want to give you an opportunity to comment because of the work that you do about as we're talking today. It's Friday the 27th of July. And the deadline passed last night for the federal government to reunite these families who they've separated at the border. And there are still, the reports vary on numbers, but the reports I heard this morning was that there were still over 400 children who had not been reunited with their families. I think the reports range between 400 and 700. Anything 100 is way too many for my government to have done this kind of injury to. I know that as we've been watching this unfold, it has been I think, gratifying to see the many experts in child abuse prevention who are expert in the area of negative childhood, adverse childhood experiences, ACEs, go on and basically get it down to an elevator speech, you know, and give a primer on what this is and why there are going to be long-term effects for these children beyond, you know, it goes way beyond. It stays with them for their whole lives. It's not over once they run into mommy and daddy in the parking lot for the video and everybody's happy and reunited. And I just wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about that a little bit and about the film Resilience, which you all are still sponsoring screenings of that.
Yes.
And I'll just sit back and say, go.
Okay. Well, we're deeply concerned about it, just like you are. The Adverse Childhood Experience Study includes a list of about 10 negative things that can happen to children that have a long-term impact on their developing brains and bodies. And one of them is separation from your parents.
Yeah.
And so, and it's one that's that has in some ways a multiplier effect because it's your connections really matter.
Yeah.
Brain connections matter, but connections and relationships to people matter. And the younger the child is, the more deep and long-lasting the impact can be, because we know from brain science that those synapses are connecting at a much faster rate.
Right.
I actually heard someone say yesterday after a resilience screening that the amount of brain development that happens in a child between the ages of 0 to 3 is far greater than anything that someone will learn when they go to college.
Wow.
Because that's how many connections are being made that early. And so many of these children we've heard about infants and toddlers being separated from their parents. And it's just deeply, deeply concerning because it's not just because it's not the right thing to do.
Which is bad enough.
But it's that long-term impact on their developing brains and the impact on the neurobiological systems that can impact their health for a lifetime. And because our brains, when we're early in our lives, we're developing brain memories, not just right. our memories of what happened, but how our bodies reacted to things.
Right.
This fear of the separation from their parents is going to be long-lasting.
Right.
And will have lots of mental health impacts. It will have health impacts, and it'll impact their ability to learn. It's a policy that makes no sense.
Yeah, it's not even penny-wise, really.
But it's also the silver lining in this conversation is that a whole host of national experts
yes.
are getting on TV, they're getting on the radio, they're getting the word out about what adverse childhood experiences are, what toxic
right.
stress is, what
right.
that means. And the American Academy of Pediatrics has particularly really yeah. stepped out and talked about what this means for children's health.
So I'm glad to hear your thoughts about that, and we'll hope for the best. That story tends to take up all the oxygen, mm-hmm. at least it did for a while, mm-hmm. until other terrible things came along to replace it. Came along and just sucked up all the oxygen, and it would be a travesty for anyone to mm-hmm. think that, oh, well, we've got this most horrible thing that's wrapping up, such as it is. So no need to worry about child abuse anymore, because that wild scenario is resolving. You all do this work every day, all day long, and you get some fantastic support, guidance in some cases, I'm sure. You get guidance from experts. You have a lot of cooperation. Mm-hmm. All around mm-hmm. the country, you have, you know, you're part of a larger mm-hmm. national organization to prevent child abuse, a concept that people sometimes have a difficult time wrapping mm-hmm. their heads around, why it's so important to invest
upstream
before the bad mm-hmm. things happen. We think of child abuse and we think of something terrible happening, and then we're going to take these steps to make sure this doesn't happen again. But even that is reactive. And what we all want to do, I think, is understand the causes and what causes mm-hmm. this to filter down mm-hmm. into families' lives. And it does continue generation to generation, unfortunately, because people have such a hard time breaking patterns, partly because of ACEs, mm-hmm. not entirely, I'm sure, but partly because of that. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I want you to jump right in and tell me all about this fantastic investment that Blue Cross Blue Shield has made in your organization. How smart are they to do this? Very, very smart. That's how smart they are. And we're talking with Sharon Hirsch. I always feel better after I talk to Sharon. It's just something about her. What is it about you, Sharon?
It's my optimism.
It's your optimism. She's the chief executive optimist for Prevent Child Abuse North Carolina. You're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Well, we're back with Sharon Hirsch from Prevent Child Abuse North Carolina, and she's going to explain to us basically how our entire society is held together. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And how she's going to explain this is by way of telling us how Blue Cross has pretty recently, when was this announced?
It was announced this spring.
This spring, right? Like
yes.
in April or, yeah. And they've made a whopper of an investment in mm-hmm. your organization. Were you nervous getting this? Did they, like, give you a big ceremonial check and everything?
They didn't give us a big ceremonial check, but they gave us, we had a really nice announcement with Dr. Patrick Conway, who's the CEO of Blue Cross North Carolina and mm-hmm. actually happens to be a pediatrician, which is really wonderful. So their investment in our organization is $1 million, and that $1 million was given to us to prevent adverse childhood experiences in North Carolina.
And because he's a pediatrician, he has a pretty good idea of what that means to do.
He absolutely does. And it's really extraordinary to have a pediatrician first and foremost leading
yeah,
our state's largest insurance company.
That's fantastic.
He
I
also,
did not know that.
He also practices a little bit on the weekends
wow.
occasionally. And he works at UNC Hospital at the emergency room. And when he made the announcement with us, and talked about why it was so important for Blue Cross to be making this investment. He said the previous weekend he'd worked at UNC and he'd had two child abuse cases.
Oh, man.
So he knew exactly why it was so important for us to be preventing this.
How about that?
And so this is all part of a big investment Blue Cross is making in the state in four key areas using their federal tax savings from the tax bill that passed this year.
Right.
The tax bill passed after their rates had been set for the year, and they made the strategic decision to invest this savings this year in North Carolina. And they're doing it in four strategic areas, three of which really directly relate to our work. One is access to health care.
Right.
One is the opioid crisis.
Right.
Another is social determinants of health and early childhood education.
And social determinants of health, I'm going to speculate here. We haven't discussed this in advance, but here's what I'm going to say that's probably about. That your zip code should not determine your health outcome.
That's part of it, and other social factors that can impact your health.
Okay.
Our funding is actually in the early childhood bucket of funding that's available. Other organizations have received big investments like this. Interact and Raleigh got one at the same time. They're the the domestic violence shelter.
Right.
TROSA received one for the opioid crisis.
Right.
The physician assistance program over at UNC Hospital has received funding to expand access to health care through that program.
Right.
So we're really excited, not just for ourselves, but for lots of partner agencies who are going to receive part of this multi-million dollar investment over the course of the year.
Oh, that is so fantastic, and it's so smart. Even, you know, I think that there's an altruistic element to the gift, but it's also just wicked smart business investment.
It absolutely is.
Because it reduces risk.
Reduces risk, and it's going to reduce costs down the road, and we'll see less incidence of diabetes, of high blood pressure, all of the things that are directly related or high risk factors for ACEs are related to what happens to us early in childhood.
Well, as the wife of a former Blue Cross underwriter, I appreciate the risk mitigation because, you know, there are limits to what you can do as an insurance company to have people help people to lead healthier lives. And so when you have something that is so well researched and very, very clear about, you know, you put in a dollar here, you're getting $1.50 out later, if not more, that's good for you, Blue Cross. You know,
we're really grateful, and they have been fabulous partners in this process and helping us to promote it. Dr. Conway's written a terrific op-ed explaining why they're investing in us that just beautifully describes why this work needs to have the investment.
And they're going to have to do it next year, right? You're just going to call them up and tell them, you guys are just so great. You have to do it one more time.
Well, we hope it's a long-term relationship.
We hope it's a long-term relationship, right? Yeah, I hope so, too. I hope so, too. And because I think it's, you know, it's good for everybody. I think it's great for Blue Cross, and I think it's great for you guys. And obviously, it's great for all the kids in the state.
Well, I think it's also a great example to other corporations to think about how they invest in their communities.
And, you know, businesses look at investing in benefits and doing all kinds of things that are outside of direct compensation for the people who work for them. And this is definitely something where they could get a big bang for their buck, so to speak.
That's
Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, you know, good on you, Blue Cross. I'm going to have to say nice things all the time about Blue Cross now. Not that I wouldn't anyway.
Absolutely.
Of course I would. But, you know, insurance companies take a lot of guff. I never liked that when my husband worked for one all those years and thought, yeah, you know, maybe don't bash the insurance companies, you guys. I mean, geez, gee whiz, you know. Anyway.
They're providing a really important
service. Really, really, really important service. Yes. So, okay. So now tell me about, I have a list of
let me tell you,
items.
But let me tell you a little bit about what we're going to do with the Blue Cross funding to prevent ACEs.
Yes. Tell me.
We are going to particularly focus on building protective factors. Protective factors are those things that we believe, based on scientific research, are the antidote to adverse childhood experiences, and really the building block to prevent them from ever happening in the first place.
Right.
So we're going to be training a core group of faith community leaders in the protective factors framework and how to build them in their church and other congregations across the state of North Carolina. They're congregations are a place that a lot of people go to mm-hmm. get parents go to, particularly right. to get their information about parenting
right.
and for social support.
Right.
Social connections are one of those protective factors.
Right.
Access to parenting education and knowledge of child development is another protective factor.
Right.
One of the largest providers of early childhood education in North Carolina are often churches and other congregations that have
right.
church-based
right.
child care settings. So
right.
we believe that faith community is a really important place
yeah.
to be talking about this. We already talk about trauma-informed schools a lot.
Right.
And our education community
right.
is already getting that information.
Right.
We've talked with the pediatric community and medical community about how do we get this more clearly understood
mm-hmm.
in medicine,
right.
Because it's still not taught very much in medical schools. And they're helping us work to advocate for a change in the way that this information is taught. And they believe the Pediatric Society is helping us add questions to the licensing exams about adverse childhood experiences.
That is fantastic. Well, that's,
I mean, it's just,
yeah.
it makes sense.
Yeah.
It,
yeah.
And
right.
so a social norms campaign is not something that is necessarily needed in those environments.
Right.
But we'll be really focusing heavily on faith community and the general public, and we'll be really raising awareness about how important it is to make connections.
Well, I think that we've been, I think that our society's been learning
mm-hmm.
a lot about what, how powerful norms are
mm-hmm.
and how many elements of our society depend a lot on norms, and our institutional stability is not one that's created by a legal system.
Well, and we also have done a lot of thinking about, so how have we moved as a society from seeing ads on TV back in the 70s of the Native American canoeing down the river that was horribly polluted to today where I wouldn't dare throw my plastic water bottle out. I'm looking for a recycling bin.
I know, right? You'd walk around with it all day if you didn't find one.
That was a very significant investment in a social norms campaign.
Right.
We've gone from kids running around with their parents in the backseat of the car with the windows rolled up and smoking,
yeah.
not realizing the impact of secondhand smoke.
Yeah.
That was largely a social norms campaign.
Yeah.
It wasn't just banning smoking in bars and restaurants.
That's right.
It was way more than that.
That's
right. What we're going to try to do here in North Carolina. And we really want to change the conversation so that folks know connections matter. It's okay to ask for help.
Yeah,
and
that's the hardest thing.
And we really want to normalize the idea of parent education.
Yeah.
We do such a good job. And another social norms change is we now, for the most part, most women will go to a childbirth class when they're pregnant. We don't go to a parenting class. And I think I've probably said this to
yes,
you before.
After you have the baby.
After you have the baby,
yeah.
we should be talking more because labor and delivery lasts less than 24 hours for most women.
Yeah.
The brain develops really, really fast, as we said earlier, between 0 and 3.
Right.
But it doesn't finish developing until they're 25.
Right.
It's a 25-year process. This is the hardest thing any of us ever do.
Right.
We need to ask for help. We need more support if we want to see different results for kids
that's
and
right.
families.
That's right. So, and that's, well, you know, what can I say except we're going to take another break and we're going to come back and Sharon's going to make us all even smarter than this, which is hard to imagine considering how smart my listeners are. You know what I'm saying. Okay. And we're gonna come back and talk more about this and about Prevent Child Abuse North Carolina is coming of age pretty soon, having a 40th birthday. I can't believe it. It seems like only last year you were 39. We're gonna be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill. And we're back talking with Sharon Hirsch from Prevent Child Abuse North Carolina about, and we're going to talk now about probably my favorite subject in the whole world, which is a biscuit.
Absolutely.
You know, man, talk about your Friday afternoon topics. I'm just starting to feel it right now for tomorrow morning, getting up, getting some coffee, getting a biscuit. And where are you going to do such a thing? You're going to go to Rise Biscuits in Carrboro, North Carolina. And here's why.
The Rise owner has generously agreed to partner with us on our social norms campaign. And so they are helping us out by sharing stickers that say things like Rise Cares, have our website on it, and then some of our messaging, and they're putting it on all their boxes and other packaging when anyone buys a donut or a biscuit or a dozen. And it's really wonderful. Tom Ferguson is the owner of the franchise, and he understands adverse childhood experiences. He's had some experience with it himself. He understands, wants to give back. And so they're helping us with this messaging, and they're sharing wonderful messages like when children are raised in safe, stable, nurturing homes and communities, they thrive. That resilience is built, not born. Parenting is hard. It's okay to ask for help.
So important.
Yes. And that North Carolina spends $2 billion annually on the costs of child abuse and neglect, but it's preventable.
Yep.
And then finally, they also say you can help great childhood happen by investing upstream. And so with all of these messages and stickers, it also provides our logo and our website address for folks
and
to go.
And associates you with a tremendous product, a biscuit. I love
and a donut.
And a donut. Oh, man. You know, I just so can you guys get a partnership going with do you have one already going with any local breweries by any chance?
We don't, but if you want to introduce me to somebody, I'd be happy to talk to them.
It's an interesting prospect right there. You know, we could just do a whole program just going through all the food products
groups.
That's
right.
Yeah, all the food groups that are including Love should be a food group because it fills you up. That's what I think. How about that? There's a tagline for you. Yeah, that's just fantastic. There's so many businesses in Carrboro that do terrific campaigns that are like this, and they just pick the thing that they know is an association that they want to be proud of, and I can easily understand why Rise would want to do that. Good on you, Rise.
Yeah, and we think both Blue Cross and Rise are providing great examples of how corporations and businesses can play a role and do something to help raise awareness and change the way we think about this work.
And this is like, you know, you were just telling me during the break that there are adverse childhood experiences, and then there are community experiences. And talk about that a little bit, because, you know, we just about had the whole show during the break. I'm just gonna give that away.
Well, we know that what happens in communities also impacts what happens to kids and families.
Right.
And so there are some things that undergird the adverse childhood experiences that either can make it better and be a buffer or make it worse.
Right.
And so things like community violence and lack of affordable housing and lack of living wage jobs, lack of transportation, all of those things also impact a child's ability and family's ability to thrive.
Right.
And so when we invest in those services and programs, we're also investing in helping get better outcomes for kids and families.
I mean, there have been a lot of people who have benefited from, you know, Boys and Girls Clubs and the Y and resources like that are in communities. And they said, well, you know, my neighborhood was terrible, but at least I had the Y, or I was in a basketball league after school, and I was in the Scouts and all that stuff. And
yeah, all those kinds of organizations,
things,
they're all those really important buffers that when you have a system of support, it can offset the adversity when you have those buffers. And that's why it's so important to build those protective factors.
And it also engages kids with other adults in their lives who they can go to if they're concerned about something, or if they have a friend who's in trouble. And, you know, like you were saying about asking for help, I know that with and we have talked about this many times, but I don't think you can talk about this too many times, that when you're pregnant, you go to a childbirth class to get ready for the event that's going to take 24 hours or less in most cases. I'm not going to name any names, but my daughter-in-law is quite the show-off for having a protracted labor that took entirely too long. But generally, it's a process that's going to take less than 24 hours. And then you've got to raise this kid. So you've taken a class to get ready for the physical event of giving birth, and then there you are with the package.
Yeah, they might teach you how to put a diaper on the baby at the hospital. Yeah, and they may teach you a little bit about breastfeeding.
Yeah.
But there's a whole lot more to it than that.
And there's so much in breastfeeding that can kind of go off the rails. My particular case was I had children who were like this side and not that side, and that's what it's going to be. And, you know, we tried everything and had, you know, mixed results. But, you know, that's difficult. And it's really not, it's not part of the norm of, you know, you have a lot of people telling you you're going to, you're nice people, so you're going to be wonderful parents.
Or well, you can have happen what happened to me when my mom came after the birth of my first child and helped me out that first week.
Yep, I had that too.
And
yes.
Then she left. And when she left, she said,
Good luck.
You're going to figure this out.
Yeah.
Well,
right.
I figured out some of it. There were a lot of things along the way that I wasn't very good at.
Right.
And there were lots of challenges. And it's kind of crazy. You know, the definition of insanity is to keep doing things the same way and expecting a different result.
I think a mother came up with that realization, actually.
And so,
I mean, Einstein
invested,
gets the credit, but, you know.
But if we invested and really talked differently about parent support groups and normalizing taking parenting education classes, it would be much easier to help those families that are really at risk. They're not going to feel bad about going to a parenting class if it's something all of us, of course, do.
Right, right. And I have to say that I don't have science to be behind me on this. I have my intuition that tells me that this is generally a woman's problem of feeling like, I'll just put it on myself, I would feel like something must be wrong with me that I don't intuitively know what the right thing is to do this way or that way. When it comes to things like the baby is waking, the baby was sleeping through the night, but now the baby isn't sleeping through the night. How come I don't know what to do about that? If I'm such a wonderful mother, how come I haven't figured that out? When you and I were having our kids, me more than you, but for both of us, I believe it's true, our families were hundreds of miles away.
Exactly.
And long distance was not free.
That's right.
And so, you know, yeah, you can call your mom, but, you know, you can't call your mom and talk for an hour every day. You could now, but you can't. Mm-hmm. You couldn't then. And so because of the fact that we had relocated to another state, you know, we did have to figure it out.
Yeah, we had the same issue. And because I'd lived in a place that I was relatively new to, I didn't have a strong social network either.
Same here. Right.
So it's really, really hard.
Yeah,
think you've got to do this by yourself.
Right. I will say that the network that I had largely was my husband's coworkers who all worked for
Blue Cross.
So, you know, it wasn't all bad. I mean, you know, I got some great advice from lovely people at Blue Cross. And when I was pregnant the second time, one of my husband's coworkers had just had a baby that she and her husband had waited a long time to have. Mm-hmm. And she said, "Oh, Jean, I spent so much money on maternity clothes. You've got to take these clothes and wear them. I spent so much money. I really want them to be used." And because of that, I didn't have to buy
maternity clothes. That's an incredible gift.
What a great thing. And, of course, I collected all of it up when I was done being pregnant. Mm-hmm. And brought it right back to her, and it made its way around the ANU department. Many, many women benefited from the lending library of Pam Turner's closet.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. And, you know, actually, I think of that kind of thing as, you know, I think of, you know somebody's pregnant or you know they have a young child and you remember something about when your child was young, and that's what I'm trying to do at least with my grandson. And I do think it's helpful, but it's very clear to me that it's hard to raise your hand and say, I'm toast. I need something. I don't even know what.
Well, and what we know from research and surveys that have been done here in North Carolina is that people do feel good about the idea of asking for help, and they think it's an okay thing to do, but they don't know where to go and who to ask.
Yeah.
For the help, and that's the challenge, and that's the gap that we hope to to begin to fill in this campaign.
Yeah, and I hope that with other, especially family to family, that when you have neighbors and friends and whatever, you know, you don't even necessarily have to see that anybody's struggling. If you look at them and say, you know, man, they have three kids and they both work two jobs. There's got to be something I can do to help. There must be something I can do. and take it upon yourself to identify what that thing is. And even if it's just bringing the casserole.
Or even it's just being nice to the mom whose kid's misbehaving in the grocery store.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
And distracting that child.
I'm glad you said that because I have a great story when we come back about that. I read a great story about that, and I just think that that's right up there on the top of the list. We're talking with Sharon Hirsch from Prevent Child Abuse North Carolina. You're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back with our closing moments here with Sharon Hirsch, the chief executive optimist. I knew I'd trip over it once anyway. The chief executive optimist for Prevent Child Abuse North Carolina, doing the work of the Lord. Thank you, Sharon, for your work. Whatever else I might have to say, thank you for doing the work you do.
Well, and thank the entire team at Prevent Child Abuse North Carolina. It's a big group effort, and I have extraordinary staff.
They really are fun. Your communications person, you showed me this wonderful picture of her with donuts over her eyes, and I just thought that was the funniest thing I've seen all day. And I spend entirely too much time on Facebook, so think about that. This is up there with, you know, goats jumping over a gap, which is just a family of goats jumping over this gap on a mountain. I don't know why that's so entertaining, but it is.
Well, I'll have to make sure Chris listens into the broadcast now
absolutely.
So she can hear this.
Absolutely. And golden retrievers doing any number of things that are just incredibly amusing. My brother has two golden retrievers. I had one some years ago. My brother has two. And how golden retrievers do various things will just wipe you out laughing. And of course, kitten videos. What is funnier than a cat video? Nothing. Except your communications person with donuts for glasses, basically. Was that in conjunction with the Rise?
Absolutely.
She put that together for
our social media stuff.
So here is the most excellent thing about that whole thing is that as she's doing that, she's working. I want a job where holding donuts up to my face and having my picture taken is something I do, and I say, I'm at work now.
Well, you have to put play in your day. There are lots of ways to raise awareness by putting play in your day.
That's right. Everybody needs play in their day. That's a very good point.
It's how we learn.
Do you have a bumper sticker that says that?
I don't, but I can make one.
Well, I think you should make that happen immediately. Go right out to the bumper sticker store, the all-night Chapel Hill bumper sticker store. Say that three times fast. Go ahead. Say it safe for the radio. So let's talk about community-based planning.
Absolutely.
And how you do that.
Well, we've really worked hard to mobilize a few communities in North Carolina to see if we developed a plan locally, could it make a difference? And what kind of sparked it was the fact that our state, as every state has federal reviews of the child welfare system. We failed every indicator. And it got us thinking, what can we be doing differently? And talking to social services directors across the state and started talking about the fact that we're required in North Carolina to develop a lot of plans at the local level.
Right.
Work first plans, Medicaid outreach, food stamp outreach, child support. But there's never been any requirement for any planning around prevention.
That's amazing, isn't it?
It's really amazing. So we came up with an idea about how to do this. It was modeled largely off the work that I did in Durham County a number of years ago to help create a 10-year plan to end homelessness.
Right.
And so we basically modified that process of really educating the community about why this issue was so important, bringing together stakeholders across various sectors, business sector, different agencies, the nonprofit community, the faith community.
Right.
And then what we've done is we've used the documentary film Resilience to educate folks about the issue and get people motivated to do something.
Right.
A core group of folks had been willing to develop a plan, and we trained them in the protective factors framework and then asked them, develop a plan for your community to strengthen those five protective factors.
Right.
They do an analysis of what's currently in place so that they identify what their community's strengths are and where the gaps are. Put that plan together in an evaluation plan that's built around indicators that already exist and are being used in other systems.
Right.
And we're particularly focusing on the pathways to grade level reading indicators because they have been developed.
Everything. Right.
It's everything. And the proxy for child well-being is being able to read at grade level by the end of third grade.
Right.
And so we're particularly looking at the indicators that relate to family functioning and family support. Our first plan was developed in Cumberland County, mm-hmm. which is Fayetteville area, the home mm-hmm. of Fort Bragg and Pope Air Force Base. So
right.
big military presence. They were very involved in the planning. Law enforcement was involved with the planning. And their community just got it.
Yeah.
Part of it was they'd had a series of articles in their local paper about the crisis in their child welfare system.
Mm-hmm.
They have the highest number of children in foster care of any county in North Carolina. And so they were really motivated.
Wow.
And their community came together and they set what I call a big hairy goal. And so their plan is...
That's a BHG, right?
Yes. Their big hairy goal is that they are going to reduce child maltreatment in Cumberland County by 90% by 2030. So this is their 90 by 30 plan.
Wow.
And they are on fire. We've been really impressed. They are letting everyone in the community know. They're asking people to sign a pledge to support the work. Their county commissioners approved the plan back in November
mm-hmm.
with a group of folks who came together to support the plan.
Mm-hmm.
Gene knows that I worked at Durham County, and I went to lots and lots of county commissioner meetings.
Oh, my.
This is the first county commissioner meeting I ever went to where people gave a standing ovation after the vote, and people were there to support something and not protest it.
That's fantastic.
It was just fantastic. 22 agencies coming together to do this.
Wow.
And as a result of this, the state has just invested $290,000 in bringing the Triple P positive parenting program to the Cumberland County area,
right.
to that region, with Cumberland taking the lead, because this community has developed a hospitable environment and wants to see parenting education.
Right.
That was one of the goals. That they said they wanted to see evidence-based parenting programs.
Now, let me tell you what you already know, because that's what I do. I will tell you that the reason that that response was like that is that everybody wants this. They just mm-hmm. don't know how to do it.
Well,
it's so mm-hmm. frustrating to have negative results happen and say, you know, we've just got to turn mm-hmm. this around. And, you know, banging your fist on the table just doesn't get it
mm-hmm.
done.
That's right.
And so to have a specific and active set of tasks that you can do
and they
that
now
are
have,
understandable and doable.
And they have teams. And they have
right.
trained now more
right.
than 200 people in the Protective Factors framework in their
yeah.
community. They're training parents to lead parent cafes to really
right.
engage parents in the process.
Right.
It's really exciting. And I think the one of the underlying messages is that we can do a lot at the state level.
Right.
But just like we want people to eat local and buy local— prevention
right.
happens locally. It
right.
happens in communities. It happens in families.
Right.
And so if we're going to change things at a state level and a mm-hmm. national level, it's got to start
very local.
Very local.
Right. And everybody needs to feel a personal responsibility about
mm-hmm.
it, including, as we were discussing earlier, excuse me, classic scenario in the grocery store.
Yes.
That, you know, the mom in front of you or the dad in front of you has a child who's just reached their limit. And, you know, what can you do about it? Instead of standing there with your arms crossed saying, oh, this is going to make everything take longer, you know, without crowding anybody's space, just try to engage the child and just try to help. You know, engage and play. And
tell mom and she's doing a good job and she's
say,
a good
you know,
mom.
Man, some days it just all you need to, you never can tell if that one piece of encouragement was just enough to get somebody through a horrific day.
Absolutely.
And I mean, I've been on the receiving end of generosity like that in my life. I'm sure you have too. And the person who was saying that kind thing to me could never know that was exactly the moment when, oh my goodness, if I hadn't heard that, I just don't know what would have happened. And, you know, it's a great investment. You're not going to necessarily know that it came out that way and whatever, but you'll feel better and the kid will probably feel better and the mom will feel like she can get through it one more day. And that's a big deal. That's
well,
what you got to start with.
And I have said it consistently all afternoon. Connections matter.
Connecting exactly.
with people and helping them out and being kind.
It also kind of breaks the fog of you know, I just everything's feeling like everything's going wrong. And it just mm-hmm. feels like, oh, that's right. There are human beings around me and they might actually be able to help me along just a
and
little bit.
And they might
bit.
Care.
And they might actually care. They probably do, in fact. So yeah, you know, that really matters, folks. Go out and give a mom a pat on the back. You'll never go wrong with that. Sharon, I feel so much better every time I talk to you. Thank you so much for coming in.
Well, thank you for having me and for helping us spread the message. It's really important.
You know, that's what the water cooler is for, spreading water and spreading happiness. That's what we're here to do. And we're going to have you back anytime you think of anything you want to share with us. You let us know. And in the meantime, I'm going out to Rise Biscuits and getting me a biscuit. That's what I'm doing.
And go buy a whole dozen for your
office. I'm just going to buy a dozen for the office. That's what I'm going to do. And, you know, I work by myself at home, but that's okay.
That's okay.
I'll eat them all.
I'm telling your readers, go buy, or your listeners.
Yes, that's
listeners,
right.
Go buy a dozen for your office.
Get yourselves out to Rise Biscuits and tell them thank you for helping, because, you know, that's a fantastic thing you're doing. I'm so proud of them. All right, everybody, get out there and have a great weekend. We'll see you next week here on the radio on the Weekend Water Cooler.
Follow Gene on Twitter at Gene Bolduc and tweet your comments and questions with the hashtag WCHL.